Good morning. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City, celebrating local chefs and the innovative cuisine of Central Ohio. Chef Marcus Meacham of Bodega in the Short North is joining me today, along with WOSU restaurant reviewer Rich Tarapak. We'll be taking your questions later during this segment of the program. We will be focusing our attention, laser-like attention, on Marcus.
Yes,
welcome
yes.
to the program.
Thank you.
Nice. How long have you been at Bodega?
I've been at Bodega now for almost 2 years. Yeah, it's been a fun journey.
From where?
Before Bodega, I was at Barrio. I was executive chef at Barrio. Before Barrio, I was at Latitude 41. Before there, I was at Corazon Club and Spa, Von Jazz. You know, all the places that that were destination spots. You know,
yeah,
all the fun spots.
Yeah, good spots.
Well, you didn't start out, from what I understand, learning about cooking necessarily.
Oh, no.
You majored in something completely different at Ohio University.
Yes, I majored in kinesiology. Which was, now that I'm still paying student loans, was a huge waste of my time and money. And then through that, I started working in kitchens and basically the instant gratification of cooking.
So you were working your way through school.
Yeah, I was working my way through school. I was training paramedic students, firefighters, at Hocken College, and they hated it. You know, when you train someone, they hate it. Mm-hmm. You know, work out. I hate you. You know, and you know, when you give someone a dish and when they start nodding your head, you're like, oh, they enjoy that instant gratification. I love this. I love seeing people enjoy themselves. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
And you also describe yourself as an artist.
Yeah. I draw, I paint, I do all sorts of things, but now my art is mainly my food. Culinary artistry. There's definitely an art to it. To make a plate, to build a plate, to do all of that, it's definitely an art to it. Yes, definitely.
So each plate is a work of art?
Yes. If it's not, it's just slap on a plate. If you can't make it look pretty, make it look, you see it first. Obviously, you smell it first when
sure.
it comes to you. But
you do eat with your eyes
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Once you see it, it's on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll remember that the next time I go out to dinner.
Yes. Definitely look at your food when you eat.
You know, I think there are a lot of chefs who also are pretty good artists. I think of, Jim Boudreaux, who is actually a financial planner,
yeah.
but a pretty good chef as well, has a great talent. And his son, Spencer, certainly does down at Pistachio Vera. I think that's what it takes. It takes an appreciation for design of plate, color, all of those kinds of things.
Exactly.
It's a real good talent to bring to the table, as it were.
Yes.
And how would you describe the menu at Bodega?
The menu is, it's heavy bar fare, gastropub-esque.
Gastropub is what it's called, yeah.
Formerly known as bar food.
formerly known as regular bar food, yeah.
With a lot more beers.
Yes. Too many beers, almost. I can feel the hangover right now. We got, we have the mac and cheese. You have, the spinach dip, We have a bacon Swiss burger, Hawaiian burger with pineapple and Spam on it. We have a hanger steak dish with crushed fries as a fry cake. We have, it goes everywhere. But then also, I throw in these features that are kind of like out of nowhere. It's kind of like a pop-up restaurant all of a sudden. It's kind of like there's a new restaurant inside of my restaurant. It's like, it's not connected to any genre. Mm-hmm. It could be anything from small plates to big plate diner, blue plate specials. I did a bologna sandwich called the Shaka Khan. the brand of bologna was Khan's bologna. Cut it real super thick. I also play with the names of food. I have a sandwich coming out this week, this Friday. My feature is actually today. My feature comes out. I'm doing bistro style burgers. It's called All That and Dim Sum, an Asian style dish, Korean. I have kimchi, I have a bulgogi marinated ribeye, and a green cabbage slaw basically on a burger.
Wow.
And it's for this week I'm doing huge burgers. Something people can really get down on.
So you have a special every Friday?
I was doing specials every week. Now it's I kind of broke it down to 2 weeks. It gives people time to catch up. Most of the time, I would do them for 1 week, and
somebody'd hear about them.
Yeah,
somebody'd
hear about
it.
By the time they get there, it's gone. I'm like, hey, I told you, I'm posting this stuff on Facebook for a reason. You need to catch up. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you waiting for? Like, hurry up and get in Bodega. Yeah. We're at the corner of 3rd and High, 1044 North High Street. Come to Bodega. What are you doing?
And we're talking with Marcus Meacham, who is the chef at Bodega. Bodega carries and is known for a wide menu of beers, international beers, as well as domestic beers. And now, from what I understand, the owner has opened up his own brewery.
Yes, Seventh Son.
On 4th?
It's on 4th. 4th and 4th, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful spot. It's a huge patio. It's right down the street. So,
how important is beer, though, when it comes to the menu? Do you try and pair the food with the beer?
I love doing beer pairings. It's easy to cook with beer. It's easy to drink a beer with your food. You know, it's easy to match them up. So, yeah, I love the food beer combo.
And do you work closely with the owner on the menu, or is that pretty much your bailiwick?
It's pretty much myself, Charlie Umlin, my awesome sous chef, and my kitchen manager, Dave Trimmer.
Dave sounds like a trio.
Yes. Yeah, we're kind of like, was it the High Tops? Was it, who is that? The group, they all dress alike and dance the same? What is that?
There were a bunch of them.
Yeah.
That's my era.
Yes, Wu-Tang.
Well, you know, it's funny because beer goes with so many cuisines.
Yes.
You know, you think about having Thai food, and it's great to have beer with it.
Exactly.
Japanese.
A nice light beer.
German. You know, it can go anywhere. Yeah.
What about local ingredients? Do they have a place on the menu?
Always. There's always a place for local ingredients. If you're passing up anything local, anything like Ohio sweet corn, if you're passing up anything not from around, you're wasting your time. You might as well get everything from GFS and, you know, frozen veggies. You might, if like, come on, utilize the North Market, utilize local, any local produce you can get from your purveyor, utilize it. Don't waste your time.
What are you looking for at the North Market these days?
Ooh, the North Market, oh man.
Probably another prize. You just won the Grill Masters
award. A little plug here.
And we are going to be talking about grilling during the show.
Yeah. Awesome. North Market, I go in there, I try to find anything rare that I can't really find anywhere else.
Yeah.
I go to Curds and Whey a lot for their cheeses.
Yeah. Mike does a great job.
Yeah, Mike is awesome. And we actually use pretzels. So they're on the menu. We make three different sauces, a whiskey butter, a Dijon, and then just a queso, just a regular standard queso dip. So, yeah.
How about the farmer's market outside? Anything coming in yet?
Oh, farmer's market. I love cooking with bee pollen. That's a weird thing, right? Huh. I have this cookie on the menu. It's called the Wu-Tang cookie. It's 36 different ingredients.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. That's the weird thing about my cooking philosophy. It's not, I can keep it simple, but also I love taking something simple and making it really complex and really annoying to the palate almost. Like, I love messing with people's palates. I love
it.
So
what does the bee pollen do?
Bee pollen, it's actually just a real organic, earthy taste. So back to the reason I use bee pollen in this cookie. 36 ingredients. Bee pollen's one of them. Hemp seed's one of them. Hennessy is one of them. Pretzels. It's ridiculous, right?
What's the dominant flavor of this cookie?
The dominant flavor is chocolate, you know, Wu-Tang.
Sure, yeah.
Well, and of course, our producer, Michael DeBonis, asked about the cookie, thought perhaps you would bring him a cookie.
Yes, I messed up. I'll bring some later. I'll come back. I'll stop back and drop
We're
off
on
a whole
noon.
Bunch.
Yes.
So apparently, they're rather famous around the city.
I wouldn't say famous.
They have a following.
They do have a following. It was one of the first desserts when I took over as chef. It was one of the first desserts I put on the menu. So I put it on the menu, got a big following, then like Wu-Tang, I disappeared. Mm-hmm. I took it off the menu, built up a want, and I brought it back. So
that's a good thing. Scarcity is a good thing. It keeps them coming back.
Yes, keeps them coming back.
You know,
back,
you mentioned
back.
When you first came to Bodega. How is there an audition involved when a chef comes into a kitchen? Do you cook the owner a plate of food? How does the whole thing
work? Yeah, the stage, the infamous stage, the scary part of getting a job. The way I got the job, Sangeeta, she came to me. They were doing...
She's a co-owner.
Yeah, she's one of the co-owners. It's her and Colin Castor. Excuse me.
That's right.
She came to me. They renovated the kitchen. It was all gas. I mean, all electric. They did gas. They needed a new menu. I helped redesign a menu, did a rollout, did training, and then got offered the job. So it worked out beautifully.
So it's kind of a rolling audition.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know if exactly. I want to be here. I don't know if I want to be here. I don't know. I'm here. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I'm still here.
So are you contributing food to the owner's brewery? Are they serving food over there?
I haven't yet, but there's always that chance, Colin, if he would...
cookies.
Colin. Yeah, there's always that opportunity. I would love to, you know, do a catering event or something down there, you know, a different event.
Do they have any food down there?
They do rotating food trucks.
Ah.
I got to give a shout out to that food truck, to Swoop Food Truck. You know, they're always doing their thing. They're always down there. You definitely need to check out these trucks.
That's great.
Cool people, good people.
Yeah.
We're talking with Marcus Meacham, who is the chef at Bodega in the Short North. How do you keep things fresh? Now, obviously, the cookies sound like an amazing concoction. And using bee pollen in your cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your inspirations?
My inspirations are to not do anything I've seen lately. Like, I barely go out to eat. If I go out to eat, I'm looking at the menu, then I know something on that menu is going to stick in my head, go to some folder in my brain, and it's going to come back, and I'm going to be like, how did I do this? And I'm going to be like, oh, no, that was something at Cameron's, or I can't do that. You know what I mean? Or if I just think of something off the top of my head, jot it down on a piece of paper.
I think I read where you said a pen was your most important tool.
Yes. If I jot it down, I rarely do this, but every now and then I look it up online. If I see that it's been done in this city, I'm gonna rip that piece of paper off, throw it away.
Huh.
I hate that. You know, I mean, I hate. You know, I have this thing.
You don't want to have the tomato basil soup?
Oh, tomato basil. Oh, that's delicious. I love that. I love tomato basil. It's so original. Oh, no.
That's what I mean. What can does it come
out of? Yeah, yeah. Is that out of a bag?
Cities like Buffalo are known for their chicken wings or beef on wick sandwiches. So almost every restaurant over time offers a certain variation on those things. So that's not, you don't want to get into that kind of cycle where you're picking up on some food trend here in Columbus.
Yeah, that's funny because like I my first dish that got a lot of shine on it was the mussels and fries. This dish, people, it's amazing. It's mussels.
Yeah,
you have a blue cheese, white wine sauce, shallots, garlic, a little butter at the end just to clean it out. Chili flake, a little heat to it, in one bowl. Oh. I forgot my favorite ingredient, bacon. And this dish got so much attention. We were going through about 40 pounds of mussels every 3 days or so, which is, you know, kind of crazy. And then it popped up on restaurants down the street. I'm not going to say who. No names, but you know, Pine House.
Sincere form of flattery,
and that's that, yeah.
Well, it's been so nice to talk to you and to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in. We've been talking with Marcus Meacham, who is the chef at Bodega, which is on North High Street.
Yeah, it's
in
corner 3rd and High, 1044 North High.
Right in that
little tables
strip.
Are up outside. It's a good time to go.
Oh, yes. Patio season.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. Yes. And we'll be back in just a moment with more of All Sides Weekend. We're talking about restaurants here with Rich Terapak. His son, Rich, and Steve Stover will be joining us as well. And we're back. It's All Sides Weekend. We're talking about restaurants here with Rich Terapak, his son, Rich, who do reviews here at WOSU on our blog, Chefs in the City, on our website, WOSU.org. You can reach us as well. Oh, I'm sorry, Steve Stover, who is a contributor to Edible Columbus magazine. We are talking about grilling. We started off the hour talking with Marcus Meacham, who is the chef at Bodega, and lots of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And apparently he won the contest.
He won the Grill Masters contest 2 years running at the North Market. And unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of time to talk to him about grilling. I don't know how much grilling they can actually do in the restaurant, but it is grilling season. Are we cooking out?
I am tonight.
Yeah, indeed.
Tonight it's lamb on the grill, in fact, and the State Farm lamb is in. I was at Huffman's yesterday, and they have about 6,000 different cuts of lamb from rack to two or three different kinds of chops, and a lot of them are on sale. And lamb is, you know, just such a wonderful thing, and domestic lamb is even better, and Ohio lamb is the best.
And this is Huffman's Market in the Tremont Center.
In the Tremont Center. But
Upper Arlington.
More and more people are showing up with domestic lamb, first of all, and Ohio and Michigan lamb, too. And it's also easy to cook. It should be cooked rare. And we've been doing
I got to pick some up for a little cooking thing next couple weeks. So I'll get
right. And I'm also making grilled lamb sausage with some Middle Eastern spices, cooked rare. So.
Margheza.
Nice. Well, that's great that you're seeing more locally produced lamb. Most of the stuff that you'll see in the grocery is imported from New Zealand, where they probably produce about 80% of the lamb in the world. But that's great to hear.
And sold through Sam's Club.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Great quantities.
Mm-hmm. But that's great to hear. It's being produced more locally.
And you also sent me, Steve, a recipe yesterday that features a sirloin, I think.
Right.
And on the grill.
Yes, we're. It's also a great time for cooking meat, and this is a recipe that Rich and I have been doing probably for 30 years. Yeah. And you take a very thick sirloin, up to 2 inches if you can stand it, and if you're going to cook one that thick, you might want to put the lid on a little bit, otherwise it'll get charred and marinated in olive oil and lemon juice.
And, for how long?
As long as you can. It really, the acid in the lemon juice sort of does tenderize the meat a little bit, and the olive oil gives it flavor, and then cook it real rare, and then slice it very thin against the grain on the bias, and then we're going to serve it with a little bed of baby arugula, with a little splash of dressing and some shaved Parmesan.
It's a recipe we picked up. I think the original recipe was from the famous Italian chef Marcella Hazan, and we've dressed it up a little bit. But it's a great
and it doesn't have anything to do with spinach.
And
it says Florentine.
What's the beauty about slicing the meat on the grain? Against
Tender.
The grain.
Against the grain, yeah.
Tenderize.
Yeah.
It tenderizes.
Easier to cut.
Easier to chew. It makes a huge difference.
At an angle. Slice and against the grain, and it's much more tender than if you cut it the other way, and less chewy.
So
real thin.
Should remember that.
Yeah.
And one of the things I read about Marcus was that he favors a hanger steak.
Great cut.
On the grill, and it's something about the way the muscle breaks down, perhaps.
Well, I know we made some a couple of weeks ago, and Jim was cooking and have to take a big piece of.
There's a piece of gristle
tendon,
in the middle.
Gristle in the center of it. And once you get that out, it's probably even a softer chew than tenderloin.
Yeah, it's the classic steak for steak frites that they have in France.
And it was something we didn't hear much about.
No, it wasn't very popular until just the last few years. Yeah. And now you can find it in any Kroger. It's a great cut. It's very inexpensive for the weight that you get compared to
so
tenderloin.
Far.
Or, tenderloin, ribeye, or New York.
It's often confused with flat iron, which is a part of the chuck. And both of them are less expensive, although the hangers, at least that I get, are more expensive. But it's also, the most important thing is it's really flavorful. But if it's marinated and cooked properly, it can also be tender and, again, real thin slice.
Yeah.
But,
and it's not too fatty a cut either.
No.
Well, of course, filet mignon is now $15 and higher.
Mm-hmm. And ribeye is like 9 or 10. Yeah. So, that's a great substitute for either of those.
And it's great for grilling in particular.
Yeah, especially. Yeah.
And we're talking about grilling with our reviewers, Rich Terapak Senior and Rich Terapak Jr., who do reviews here at WOSU, on our blog, and Steve Stover, who's also contributing to the blog. You can give us a call with your questions. If you have any recommendations about restaurants, we'd love to hear those as well. 292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also reach us on Facebook and Twitter and through the U.S. Post Office and all sorts of ways to reach
us. Call the NSA. You
know, call anybody. They'll hear you.
I don't know that the NSA is particularly interested here, but...
You never know.
Give us a call, 292-8513. We've talked about a number of new places that are coming up kind of unexpectedly, especially around the brewery district, which seems to be coming roaring back to life.
It sure does, yeah. I mean, I think, has Till opened up yet? The new, Eric Till, excuse me, White Rabbit and the old Tommy Keegan's?
I don't believe so.
They were shooting to open this month, I know. Yeah. But I've seen some of the preview dishes from their menu look fantastic. And it sounds like they've done a lot of work to the inside of the place, chandeliers and everything. So that's one to look forward to. Unfortunately, we lost McCaskey's, which was only open for about a month in the old bar above Hankey's.
Yeah, Fresno is open down there.
Yeah, Fresno's open. So, yeah, the brewery district's experiencing somewhat of a renaissance right now.
Yeah, and it could be because it's still somewhat easy to park, which gets more difficult.
Is that it? I wonder. We just had a boomlet of new restaurants, and I'm trying to figure out. I know the economy's better, but.
Well, I think in that neighborhood, I think Shadowbox helped rejuvenate things, and people driving, there's a great Kroger store down there, the brewery Kroger's, and it just kind of gets people going back to the neighborhood.
It's actually pronounced Kroger in the brewery district.
Well, and of course, it's more and more difficult to find apartments in the Short North. It's where everybody wants to be, and this is a perfectly good substitute on the south end of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same way that the Short North developed kind of after German Village began to in the 90s. This is, I think, just a natural reaction. German Village and the Brewery District went through a little bit of a downturn in the 2000s, especially once Hankey shut his place down. But yeah, it's certainly coming back.
All the new apartments down there don't hurt.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt at all. Yeah. You need people.
But Kevin and Laurie Ames, who are the proprietors of Fresno, have always sort of been cutting edge. They were sort of pioneers in the Short North and food carts and a couple restaurants about near Broad and High. But we went to the Fresno's, and I thought it was classic Kevin and Laurie, straight up. It's a pretty low place, a little dark. A little bit noisy, but they have a great patio, and it's on South 4th, tucked in.
Is it the old Howl at the Moon? Is that where it's located?
I
think so, if anybody remembers.
It's at 460 South Front, and you can't see it from the street. And it's back up in there. There's a Chinese restaurant on one side and Fresno on the other. And it's got the classic covering all the bases, a lot of small plates. We had, I think the best thing we had was the beer braised, beef rib tacos, which were really good. They have pizzas, a really nice little fried chicken, fairly small menu. And, actually the night we were there, almost everybody was on the patio cause there was a lovely breeze going through. And, so I think Fresno's probably worth a visit. We've got a blog on it. I don't know if it's up yet, but I'm going to talk to Nick after this, and maybe he can put it up.
It's Nick Hauser, our
blog
guru.
Commander. But it's wosu.org/chefsinthecity, and we'll put that up.
Yeah, and I submitted one for Hey Hey, which Miriam talked about a couple weeks ago. It's a bar on Whittier down in the same neighborhood.
Oh, the Hey Hey.
The Hey Hey.
Well, that's been around for years.
Yeah, Piedo is cooking there now, who has the Coop as a food truck and is doing great stuff. It's fun because it's eclectic. It is it's old German Village guys who've probably been sitting at that bar without going home for weeks
for
on
decades.
End. And then hip young couples and big parties came in. They're the ones who are featuring the famous Yak Burger, which comes with a sunny side up egg on top and arugula and mayonnaise and a bunch of other stuff. They've got a good sausage burger as well. And they have sauerkraut balls, which are, you can't find except in the frozen food section. And they replicate the ones from the old downtown restaurant.
I think Barley's has sauerkraut
balls,
they?
Too. Yeah. These are he's making himself, and they have jalapeno sauerkraut balls as well. They got a bunch of different beers. They've got all sorts of They have pink flamingos and pigs and Ohio State banners and all kinds of weird stuff, but it's a lot of fun.
What were you doing in there?
292-8513, and Maria has called us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, you were talking about things one liked to grill, and I have, for the past couple of years, been making paella on a wood fire.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as one's niece is in class, it is very, very easy.
That's well said. That's the tedious part.
I get chorizo, sometimes I get andouille, sometimes I use chicken thighs, sometimes I use duck thighs, sometimes I use rabbit saddles.
Where are you getting your chorizo?
La Michoacán.
Okay.
That's the only place I get mine.
Yeah.
And where is that?
It's on Morse Road.
Yeah, there's several locations around town. There is one on Morse Road. There's one on South Hamilton.
Sawmill at Bethel.
Yeah, it's a terrific Mexican market. There's six or seven of them in Central Ohio now.
Yeah.
And every now and then they have a dried chorizo,
yes,
which works even better.
Yeah.
That's probably better for paella.
Mm-hmm.
And wood fired and the whole deal?
Yes, indeed.
Where do you build your fire, may I ask?
My husband built a stone fire pit in the backyard.
Oh, great.
And I just lay a grate over it and put a cast iron pot on it. And it's so hot. It cooks so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the only secret I would impart is make a tea of your saffron so that it completely infuses in the liquid that you're going to use.
Yeah, just throwing the little stamens in doesn't do it. Yeah.
No.
Right. Especially not if it's cooking that fast. Yeah.
It's a waste of good saffron to just throw it in.
Which is too expensive to waste.
And you know, mm-hmm, Mr. Boudreaux has a fire pit at the Franklin Park Conservatory.
Oh.
And he does demonstrations of his paella there probably at least once a year. You might want to check the schedule. He's got at least 10 million paella pans and the wood fire, and it's really a thing. And the important thing is the crispy critters on the bottom where the rice gets crispy in the hot fire, according to people.
Sure. Yeah, and when you have a wood fire, you get some serious heat.
Yeah, yep.
So in addition to cooking quickly, does the fire impart some flavor?
Well, I think the scorch kind of helps a little bit, and that's what Steve was talking about.
Oh,
The Spanish use a Valencia orange wood only because it imparts an orange flavor, but I'm not subtle enough to notice that kind of thing.
Well, there's also a pan in between the food and the fire, which probably diminishes the amount of fire, but we have one of those little fire pits, and I have a little grill top that goes over it. It's called a Tuscan grill, and I love cooking over firewood. This steak Florentine, it gets a really smoky and almost sweet flavor when cooking any meat or chicken over hardwood. It's just a completely different thing, and it's a lot of fun, although there are various local ordinances that you have to be aware of. In Arlington, you have to cook food, you have to have a receptacle to cook it in, you have to have a hose, and there are three or four little rules that you have to use if you're going to do an open fire. At least
the fire department stands ready in front of his house.
Yes. I always call them, my local firehouse, just to tell them if I'm going to have an open fire, because sometimes this hasn't happened in years, but the neighbors would call in and say, you know, there's a fire or something like that.
So if you're going to have a grill or a grill out, you call
the
fire department?
No, not grill. No, but an open wood fire.
It's a pit.
Yeah, but you could turn a Weber into a pit.
You could,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the wood smoke, I think, that might have caused that to happen. But
so somebody might think you're burning trash or leaves or something.
But the takeaway is that cooking over wood, burning wood, is in your fireplace, if you have to have the equipment and do it carefully, but it's really fabulous.
292-8513. Mara, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
That was very interesting. And, of course, there are lots of different things we've talked about in the past, making pizza, for example, on the grill.
Which I was really skeptical about because I thought the dough would kind of, you know, form little grooves and slip through. But No, you don't. You can throw it right on the grill, and it's amazing.
I'm a wimp. I put it on the pan for a few minutes just to get it a little bit cooked.
But yeah,
you get some grill mark, you get some smoke on it, and it's cool.
But you can throw it right on.
Just don't put the goodies on too early.
So you want to cook the crust before you put the toppings
on.
Mm-hmm.
and flip it, then
have
put the stuff on.
Have you ever done pizza?
I haven't, no. My dad has several times, I know.
And you're all still here to talk about it.
That's right.
And if you're a wimp, you could also do those pre-made crusts and...
Hush your mouth.
Oh, my goodness. Good.
No.
You don't have to be a wimp to use pre-made crusts. That's a pain.
You know, what are they called?
Baboli.
Baboli.
Not that I'd know.
And actually, I assume those would probably go on the grill even easier.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
The point is that they're pre-cooked. But, you know, cooking the other thing, and maybe Rich and Rich can talk about this, but grilling vegetables. It's just wonderful. Eggplant being a perfect example.
Yeah, I do. I'd use my grill wok, which is essentially, you know, it looks like a wok, but it's got several holes in it, small enough that no food can fall through. And, I mean, honestly, that's how I do vegetables most nights, because I grill most nights in the summer. And, yeah, you just chop up a bunch of vegetables, throw a little, you know, Italian dressing, soy, salt, and pepper on them, and toss them around on the grill, and it imparts a wonderful smoke flavor. It's a really healthy way to eat vegetables as well. You're not, you know, using any butter or anything.
Maybe a little olive oil.
Yeah, a little olive oil, too, yeah.
Well, that's not too bad.
Well, we've been making asparagus on the grill for the last couple of weeks, and I've got a mesh that I use.
Exactly.
And I brush olive oil, put salt and pepper, a little sea salt and some pepper on them, and it's out of this world.
Yeah, it is. It's really
right.
Good.
No, I do that as well with asparagus. I generally, you know, I'll put coals in half the grill and not half the grill. I'll cook it for a little while off the heat and then add it on. Put it on heat at the end just to kind of crisp it up. Put the grill marks on
it. Gives it kind of a nutty taste.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah.
There's a famous dish that friends down in German Village make, and I don't know what the name of it is, but it's asparagus, and you kind of mound it up with cream cheese and wrap bacon around it and put it on the grill, and it is phenomenal.
Wow.
It's phenomenal.
And prosciutto. Some people do prosciutto.
Yeah. Now I would think that cream cheese would kind of drip off.
Yeah. No, it's...
Well, inside the bacon, I assume?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
292-8513. We're talking with our reviewers, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and with Steve Stover, who are all writing for our Chefs in the City blog. And you can see that by going to WOSU.org. I guess /chefsinthecity is how you get directly to the website. We're going to be taking a quick break here, and we'll be back in just about a minute or so to take your calls and your questions. Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. We're talking with our reviewers, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, who are all writing for the WOSU Chefs in the City blog. And we'd like to hear from you as well. We're taking your calls at 292-8513. You can reach us by going to our Facebook page or on Twitter or by emailing us at allsides@wosu.org. Judy is joining us this morning from Bexley with a question. Go ahead, Judy.
Okay, hi. Oh, this program is just incredible. My son is...
Oh, we think so, too.
Thank you, Judy.
My son is a professional chef at a country club in Powell. How did you get your start? Who taught you how to cook? That put the inspiration in you. And my second question is, of course, I'm African-American. I cannot acquire the taste for olive oil. I know that there's different flavors of olive oil. Do you have something that you can recommend that's more fruity?
Well, you know, if you're worried about the stronger taste, just don't buy what we recommend using most of the time, which is the darker extra virgin olive oil. You can get the one that you can that looks a lot like Wesson, that has just a little hint of olive flavor, and I think you can ease your way into olive oil that way, because it is, you know, it's healthy, it's it is fair. It does enhance a lot of particularly Mediterranean dishes.
Okay.
So.
And
who started you in to your cooking, I don't want to say occupation, because it's certainly more than that. Was it your mother?
No, we had two lawyers and a mortgage banker joining us this morning.
Yeah, so this is just a good hobby for us.
Cooking is kind of a creative outlet.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, thank you. Now, with the asparagus and the cream cheese and the prosciutto, do you wrap that in aluminum foil?
No, you just put it on the grill. Just wrap up the whole, you know, have all of the cream cheese wrapped up.
Bacon, okay. Bacon really does hold things together pretty well, and you know, it only gets crispier and harder as you cook it. Yeah. So,
and it cooks pretty fast.
You
but
can
it's, yeah.
use prosciutto you, in yes. place yeah. of the bacon if yeah. you want something.
It's
a little
bigger sheet. Yeah. A little
okay.
bigger thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm certainly hungry now. Thank you. Okay.
Well, thank you. And Judy also had a question about getting into cooking. Rich, your mother inadvertently was your inspiration.
Yeah. God bless her. Family, six kids. She was an Irish girl. She did a great job of raising six kids. She just hated to cook, and so she cooked. Well, and I think a lot of women of that generation, men too, overcooked everything back in the 50s, including roast beast and we had boiled potatoes without butter or parsley every night. We a bunch of us in the family started cooking. I have a sister now deceased who was a chef. I started making tuna noodle casserole on Fridays when I was probably 10 years old. It just caught on. And then hanging out with a bunch of good friends like Steve and Jim Boudreaux and son yeah. Rich, who did a great party for us last weekend for our anniversary and did some terrific food. It just kind of came about. And,
oh, how nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, I came by it pretty much just growing up in the shadows of these guys. Food is a major part of our life. And half the social events we go to involve it. And I started cooking about age 9 or 10, I think. And in high school, I often cooked dinner for the family when Dad wouldn't get home till 7:30 or 8 because he's a busy guy. And from there, it's just taken off. It's a great hobby. It appeals to every sense.
Yeah. I'll tell one little story on Rich, and that's when he was, I think, his senior year, May, when kids don't do a lot of going to school in the afternoon. And he was making a lunch for his friends that included a tenderloin, and he called me at the office and said, "Dad, walk me through béarnaise."
Isn't that what every father wants to hear from his son?
And we've also been lucky enough to have classes and worked with some of the great chefs, Marcella Hazan and Giuliano Bugiali and John Clancy and others who came through the various cooking schools where we've worked and cooked and taught over the years. And
Betty Rossbottom,
who's going to be here this fall.
And she regularly does come back mm-hmm. to Central Ohio, mm-hmm. which is nice.
Yeah.
And this seems to be a perfect creative outlet for lawyers. We have any number of reviewers, I think, at the Columbus Monthly.
Right. John Marshall's
a lawyer.
John Christensen from The Dispatch is a lawyer.
It's part of what Marcus was talking about early on, I think. You get immediate gratification out of it, and the folks you're feeding do, and you get that kind of feedback. And, Nobody's going to jail. they're not working on their divorce settlement. They're not...
No hedge funds.
No hedge funds. No looking at documents all day long. So, it's rewarding.
It's also great stress relief for mm-hmm. people in high stress professions. There's nothing better than kneading bread or throwing a big hunk of burning meat around to relieve the stress. And there's also the social, lawyers, and it's not just lawyers, but other people who like to cook. But I think it's, eating and cooking and dining is one of the greatest social conventions. And mm-hmm. I think it's a lot faster and cheaper than golf.
Well, and hopefully that won't be lost, people gathering at the table rather than texting each other or...
actually having conversations.
Face-to-face, because that, I think, is so in danger of being lost. People are not eating dinner as a family as much together anymore as they once were. My kids are grown up, but we still try and have family dinner on Sunday nights where we all get together. And
we do as well. Mm-hmm.
The kids really look forward to it, and they rarely miss it, which is a boon and a bother to me. But no, it's
that's
a wonderful
fun.
Thing.
I think that's great that the family gets together once a month and everybody shares a meal and maybe a glass of wine.
Almost every Sunday.
Yeah, we do it pretty much every Sunday. In the summer, you're out of town a lot. But it's important to us.
Well, and now in your family, with one child and another one on the way, it's a great tradition.
Within days or hours, actually.
Yeah, to get to know their grandparents.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
one of the reasons, my wife and I met out in San Francisco. And one of the reasons we came back to Columbus was so that, our kids could, know at least my parents and, have that experience growing up.
And your brother, the Gunkel?
Gunkel bread. And Gunkel comes too, yeah.
2928513, and we're talking about food and cooking. And, of course, this is our typical monthly restaurant show. We'd like to hear from you as well. 2928513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or connect through Twitter or Facebook.
Well, speaking of family dining, I think Rich took his daughter, Sophie, and his bride to Philco yesterday.
Yeah, that was my second trip there. My first trip was with Dad.
Where is Philco?
Philco is, it's on... North High in the Short North, kind of right in the center of things.
How can everything be in the Short North?
It was the one space left that hadn't been upgraded. It was the old Phillips Coney, which is the throwback to, you know, probably the 50s or 60s that's been around. And
this is a diner.
It's a diner, and the ownership group that has been involved in Rossi, 185, and Little Palace took over the space and did an excellent renovation to it. It's very kind of modern, chic diner. They have a beer and liquor license, but the food is terrific, and I think they've really filled a niche that the Short North did not have, which was someone who serves breakfast throughout the day. There's very little that the Short North doesn't have at this point, and that was one of them. And I went back. So Dad and I had lunch there. We had a veggie burger that was really good.
The Luna Burger.
Yeah. All their bread is just from around the corner at Eleni Christini. And
they got the little hot dogs.
Did you say Luna?
Yeah,
Luna
Burger. We had a little pulled pork sliders on Johnny Cakes, which are little, you know, miniature pancakes, which was excellent. And then I went back for breakfast. I just wanted to try that out as well with my wife and daughter. And I know Miriam had written about the maple ricotta cornbread and her review of it. And, man, that stuff is fantastic.
Is it?
I mean, perfectly moist, sweet, savory, everything.
So they're doing some real original things.
Yeah, they are. The menu's terrific. I mean, it looks like it's running well for only being up 5 weeks. So, no, I think it's a great addition to the Short North. I couldn't have thought of anything to put in there, but I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, I agree.
You going to do a blog?
Yes, I am, actually. I've got a first draft written, so look for that soon on the website.
And I do have Miriam's review here, but I don't see an address for it. It's in the Short North on North
High
Street.
It's kind of right. It's right between, I think, On Paper or next to Press Grill is a good way to think of it. Most people know Press Grill.
It's in
that's down near.
Okay, more or less across the street from Rigsby's.
Okay, so it's down near Bottles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's that far down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was a tiny place, and back when that was Skid Row and I worked in the neighborhood, that was Phillips Coney. It was the only decent place to eat.
If you know Press Grill or DeLevy, those are on kind of each side of it. It's in between those two.
Bottles and High is a pretty big intersection that hooks you up to the park. So 2928513, we're talking about food. We're talking about family dinner and grilling. One of the things I wanted to ask you fellows about when it comes to grilling, do you have gas grills, hardwood, charcoal? What are we using?
Good question.
I'm a charcoal purist. I never cook on gas, and I refuse to.
And you learned that at home, because I don't either.
The flavor of charcoal is just so much more superior.
Well, it is superior until you put charcoal fluid starter on it.
I don't use that.
Use a funnel.
A funnel to start it. You shove a little newspaper in the bottom.
It's a little chimney that you can buy
at
Williams-Sonoma, and you put two balls of newspaper under it and your coals, and in 20 minutes.
Yep.
You could also
And then you don't have any gas flavor in there.
You could use an electric starter. Mm-hmm. They have these things. And, of course, Boudreaux has a $2,000 turbo starter that starts coals in about 2 minutes. But don't use – none of us use fluids. We all use charcoal or real hardwood charcoal.
And don't use the matchlight charcoal.
Whatever I do.
Yeah, anything that's got gasoline in it or some oil byproduct
and
you don't want to use.
And once you stop using that, it's absolutely amazing how much better everything tastes. It really does have a heavy chemical taste.
I did a combination of wood chips and mesquite briquettes last weekend for that pork.
And pork tenderloin, that turned out great.
Yeah.
And so where does one find all of these various...
Kroger's.
Yeah, you can find pretty much anything you need at any grocery to do this. And then as far as the, you know, I think all of us use a Weber most generally.
Yes.
I have two other, I have a smoker as well, you know, for pork shoulders and ribs and that kind of thing if you're cooking over, you know, a whole day. And then I also have a Masterforge grill, which when I'm doing for larger groups, and it also has you can raise and lower the grate on it to, you know, get a little bit away from the flames if you need to. But generally, a 22-inch Weber is really all you need, and a funnel and some charcoal and a match.
And you can use the Weber either as a grill, as a smoker, unless you're doing a lot, because you... use indirect heat and a little water pan underneath. You can also use it as an oven. We talked about pizza, or I've done roasts or chickens in a Weber just by, you know, putting the lid on. So it's very versatile and a good value.
The famous beer can chicken.
Oh, beer can chicken.
And is that a full can of beer?
Half can.
Half can. Yeah. You get to drink half of it before you insert
make
it
sure,
the
and
chicken.
This happened to me one time, make sure you get a big enough chicken where it'll fit in the cavity. Because one time I got, you know, one of these little 3.5-pound chickens from the store, and I could not get the can in for the life of me. So I ended up just pouring beer into a can and sitting it in the coals. So, it, you know. So anyway, that's a
lesson learned.
And one more thing, brining is really nice. Be sure you rinse it, but maybe a quarter of a cup of salt per quart of water and a bay leaf. Brine it for chicken a couple hours to overnight. You can do it with pork as well. Rinse it off.
So now, do you need a cooler to do this? Do you have to keep the water icy cold?
I just put it in a Ziploc bag, the whole chicken or a couple breasts.
I guess I've read about it more with turkeys around Thanksgiving time.
Yeah, and you can put it, if you've got a nice chest or cooler, you can throw it in that, and that'll be fine. It doesn't have to be.
But Ziplocs are great for marinating and chilling, because then you can throw them away.
And also, the liquid gets all over the place instead of putting it in a pan.
2928513. And
rubs are other things that we should talk about when we're grilling. I think that's really important.
I'm sorry, what?
Rubs.
Rubs.
Dry rubs.
They said grubs.
Those two. I think I finally rid of them. The dry rubs, which are a combination of, you know, just about anything, paprika, smoked paprika,
when I typically do a steak, I'll throw chili powder, paprika, a little cumin, maybe some brown sugar, even coffee grounds I've used, actually, in my rub. So, you can pretty much make up, you know, however you
want. Now, is that for flavor, or is that for tenderization?
That's absolutely for flavor.
Yeah, that's great.
And anything, even as simple as salt and pepper, putting that on the meat for a half an hour to an hour before you cook it makes an incredible difference. And a lot of people, including the Zuni Cafe, do dry rubbing rather than brining, even if you put a lot of salt.
Does sugar have a tenderizing effect?
No.
And it can also mess up the grill.
Yeah, yes. It'll burn. Acid and alcohol are usually your best tenderizers in marinating.
Yeah. Okay. 2928513, and Jerry is joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. My paternal grandmother, born in 1869, never called it cornbread. She always called it Johnny Cake. But I want to mention the India Oak Grill, total name because it's off Indianola on Oakland Park, and they have the best Italian subs and a great chili. Always ask if you want onions and cheese on your chili. Absolutely great stuff. And you can get half a sub, half a meatball sandwich, or half of this, and they got a great Clintonville cheeseburger. Are any of you gentlemen familiar with that place?
Yes.
I've been there. It's a Clintonville favorite. I have several friends who live down there that frequent that place.
And are they sort of kicking it up a notch, like in the gastropub kind of thing?
I haven't been there recently, so I don't know. But it's,
are they?
Are you thinking about the Crest?
I'm going
to,
yeah.
Same old thing. It's an old converted car wash, you know. Used to be a car wash years ago. And for an old guy like me, I like those half Italian subs or half, meatball sandwich and a cup of chili or a large bowl. And it's just fantastic food, you know, if you don't want to go in and eat a great big dinner, which I don't care to anymore at my age, what the heck. And by the way, they got the best American beer in this country, and that's Yuengling's on draft.
Oh, great. Well, yeah. Maybe they are getting closer to a gastropub. I think it's really critical hearing from people like you to get neighborhood hotspots that not all of us know about, because they're somewhat unique into the Clintonville neighborhood in this case.
And be sure you check out the Crest Gastropub right down the road.
Are they open?
It's just Indianola. Been reopened. Yeah. Indianola, remodeled south of East North Broadway. We should have a blog up on that one, too.
Well, this used to be the old Crestview Tavern.
Right. It's the old Crest, yeah.
It's getting a lot of publicity.
And it's really good. And
is it open for lunch yet or just dinner?
I haven't been there just in 25 years.
Yeah. It's terrific. It's upscale. It's got a beautiful patio with lots of plants. They're growing herbs along the road and tomatoes along the side of the parking lot.
Plenty of parking.
And it's got a nice 50 beers, and a small but interesting wine list. But we have the blog on WSU.org/chefsinthecity should be up soon of the Crest Gastropub. It's yummy.
Nice. Yeah, Clintonville is becoming quite the beer hub. I mean, between that and Bob's Bar up on North High towards Worthington, probably have some of the best beer selections in the city.
You range far and wide.
And, of course, we were talking earlier today with Marcus Meacham of Bodega, and they have a very extensive
They're known for their beers as well.
Yeah, they were one of the first to have that.
Yeah, they were.
It's a great place. Yeah. Bodega is a great place.
And, Steve, you just put up a blog on markets, as I recall.
I don't know if we have time.
We have about a minute.
Be sure you get out and check out the local markets. It's the perfect time of the year to enjoy local produce. We've got Saturday markets at the North Market, Clintonville, at Worthington, and some of the best farmers from the area come in and bring food. You got your corn, zucchini, apricots, local peaches, everything. It's the most wonderful time.
I got out to Lind Fruit Farm out near Petoskey on Morse Road the other day, and I picked up some donut yellow peaches along with some white peaches. They have great sweet corn out there right now. Apples, of course, aren't quite ready yet, but Lind Fruit Farm is always a good place to stop.
And local peaches are supposed to be so much better than the ones down south.
They are.
Because they're getting so much rain
We even have a new butcher selling pork and other things, beef, at the Bexley Farm Market, Thursdays 4 to 7.
Oh, that's so much fun. Yeah.
Thank you all very much. We've been talking with Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and with Steve Stover, who are all writing for our blog, Chefs in the City, at WOSU.org. I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll be back again next month with another show devoted to food and restaurants. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. News from NPR is next. It's noon.